Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America College podcast, along with Aaron Fitt. I'm John Manuel. This podcast is powered by Louisville Slugger. Leave your mark with a 2014 attack, raid, and assault bat lineup this season. Stronger, lighter, farther, Louisville Slugger. It's a Baseball America College podcast. First of the in-season podcasts, Aaron, and we were fortunate. The weather cleared up enough for us to see some college baseball this weekend. A lot of snow last week here in the Carolinas, in the Raleigh-Durham area, but not much snow down in Wilmington. And you were going to go to Wilmington anyway. Preseason number one, Virginia. Kentucky, host UNC Wilmington, VMI, the field there. And it looked like a very competitive event. Cavaliers lose their first game, win their next two, and remain number one in the rankings. What did you see of the Cavaliers in person, and what that prompted us to keep them in the top ranking?
Well, I'll tell you, they came out, you know, flat. They weren't real good on Friday, and Kentucky kind of took it to them, I thought, in all facets. You know, Waddell looked pretty good out of the gate first three innings, and then kind of hit a wall in the fourth or fifth. Command wasn't as sharp.
Right.
But you know, afterward, Brian O'Connor wasn't really worried about it. He said, "Okay, you know, we'll see how this team responds." And he was just very relaxed about it. And they came out and played two great games the next 2 days. And that Saturday game against VMI, I thought, was a really complete, dominating performance. You know, they played well defensively. They pitched very well. They certainly hit the ball. And that's what we expect them to do. And so, and then, of course, they came out again Sunday and did pretty much the same thing. I mean, to me, the biggest encouraging things that I saw from them this weekend,
you first tweeted of all, about this, was the pitching, right?
Starting pitching, you know, because that was, I'm not going to call that a question mark for us. I mean, about them heading into the season, we thought it would be good. But it's good to see it. You know, I mean, Nathan Kirby and Josh Spores are new to the rotation, and they were both really good. I mean, Kirby, I was so impressed with his ability to locate to both sides with his fastball and especially with his secondary stuff. You know, it's a four-pitch guy, and then, you know, the pitchability,
left-handed. Athletic.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to like there. And Jim Schoener was there on Sunday to see Spores and had, you know, was it six no-hit innings? I mean, he was really good also.
And Spores was, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, he was basically their number two reliever last year after Kyle Crockett. I mean, he was often Crockett was the one-man bridge.
Yeah.
But if they needed a bridge to Crockett, it was often Spores. I know I saw him throw very well in Chapel Hill last year. I think I saw him in the ACC tournament. You know, obviously he's a big brother who threw real hard and was a high draft. But him moving into the rotation, that just wasn't a done deal that he would thrive in that situation. It's one start,
yeah.
But it was also a start in front of 3,800, a record crowd at UNC Wilmington, which that's a whole other story. How about 3,800 fans at a CAA park in February? Hashtag baseball school.
Yeah, how about
that's pretty cool for UNC Wilmington. But I thought that was a big development for them. Nathan Kirby was a high draft out of high school, projected high draft. They expected him to be a weekend guy. Spores, I think that's almost a little bit bigger story, just how good he was against a pretty good lineup.
And you know, Connor Jones, the big name freshman, got a look at him on Friday. And, you know, I mean, it was up to 95.
Wow.
With, you know, sharp secondary stuff. I mean, he's going to be really special. And, you know, so they've got arms. And the other thing that struck me about them that I didn't expect, well, not that I didn't expect, but that I was curious to see was Danny Pinheiro at shortstop. I mean, Brian O'Connor loves this guy. He thinks he's going to be a great player. And he is just a natural, instinctive, fluid defender. He's one of those really big shortstops. You know, he's like a Cal Ripken kind of a body size. And he just is natural. And he's got a good internal clock. And, you know, I mean, he moved preseason All-American Brandon Cogswell to second base.
And don't forget, what's the guy?
John LaPriest,
who was like the all-star shortstop of the Northwoods League.
Good player.
I mean, like, they have just an embarrassment of riches at shortstop.
Yeah, they're so deep. And, you know, behind the plate, they've got three legit catchers. Although, you know, Nate Irving didn't have a very good day Friday. He is good. He's better than he was Friday. But then, you know, they bring in Robbie Coleman on Saturday, and he was really good. And then they've got Matt Theis, another really good freshman. I mean, so those are two premium positions. That's how good this team is, John. The two premium positions where it's hardest to build depth, they're three deep at both those spots, although LaPriest is really more of a second baseman.
Right. His arm strength isn't quite what you need to be at short.
But, I mean, they're so good up the middle. And Brandon Downs made, you know, I mean, at one point he almost made this ridiculous catch crashing into a wall in center field. He dropped the ball, and he got up and just threw a rifle in the air right to third base. I mean, it's just from the fence. They're so athletic. They're fun to watch. They really are.
Yeah, the athleticism is what jumped out. Just talking to one of the scouts who had been down there this weekend, I guess it was on Sunday, talking to him, and he'd seen the first couple of games, and he said, you know, it was like he sounded like he was talking about the 2008 Miami Hurricanes team, because he just talked about they were hard to scout because there's so many players you have to write up. You know, it's not just two or three guys that you can focus on. Like it is with most good college teams, nothing wrong with that. But there's like 7, 8, 9 guys you're writing up for UVA, and that's a problem scouts like to have. I think that's a problem that Coach O'Connor likes to have, and Coach McMullen, and that, you know, they just obviously, you know, like you said, they came out flat. Let's talk about the team that beat them, though, Aaron, real quick. What was your take on Kentucky? The Wildcats came into the year borderline top 25 team, definitely were one of the last teams that we debated. There were like 15 teams for the last 5 spots in the preseason top 25, and they were one of the teams that we kind of debated through. And in recent years, the big knock on Kentucky is they don't play a great non-conference schedule. They kind of fatten up early, and they haven't withstood that in SEC play. Obviously, one of the good ways to put that reputation behind you is to come out and beat number one soundly on opening day.
Yeah, and I think they're going to be a pretty good club, you know, and I think. First of all, the rotation has a chance to be pretty darn good with A.J. Reed, Chandler Shepherd, and Kyle Cote. Those are 3 good arms. And, you know, the bullpen is the key for them. I mean, Jim was there on Sunday and said they ran out of a bunch of freshmen trying to kind of see what they've got there. But that's the one question mark that I still have with them is the bullpen. I like their lineup. The guys at the top especially, you know, Barrett and Cousineau, couple of lefties kind of get him going, and then you got Max Kuhn, the righty in the middle of the lineup, who swings the bat well. I think he's gonna have a really nice year. I like him a lot. Good swing. AJ Reed, of course, is a presence in the middle.
How much does it help you in your mind? Because it seemed like this was an issue for them last year of when to pitch AJ Reed. When you have a talented two-way guy like that, there's always this debate: you throw that guy on Friday so he can just you get him, and then if he doesn't, you avoid having that player get hurt later in the weekend or early in the weekend, and you don't get to use him on Sunday or. Haven't they debated that the last couple of years? It seemed like last year they started him on Fridays to start the year, and he just wasn't really an SEC Friday starter. If you could maybe elaborate on that point a little bit, like what's the debate been for them, and where do you think he fits best for them?
Yeah, and I think they've had him. They've tried using him on Sundays too, thinking that well, at least he'll be fresh the first 2 days, you know, as a hitter. But there's various things. I mean, there's various schools of thought on it. I asked him about it, and he likes pitching on Fridays.
Okay.
Just to kind of set the tone for the team. I mean, he's a competitive guy, and you know, now I think it helps that Thomas Bernal is healthy and can play a lot of first base, and that way they can maybe DH Reed a little bit more to keep him a little fresher. So I think that's kind of key. But you know, I think their lineup has some depth. I think they should be a good defensive team. I like those 2 freshmen hitting in the 8 and 9 holes. Javon Shelby, really live athlete, can really run. I think he's going to be an exciting player, and then. Connor Heady too down there, he's just smooth, you know, a smooth second baseman that I think can be a shortstop.
After is he Matt a Heady Reyes player? Going. I mean, his name Heady. Is Heady.
He's Heady. He is. That's aptly named.
There has to be some savvy that goes along with that. I would one would presume, but it sounds like a fun weekend in Wilmington. Of course, we came back Sunday with 862 other scouts. We're not scouts, but 862 scouts approximately at NC State on Sunday after all the hubbub. About the scouting rules at NC State, they just opened it up and there are just a million scouts there on Sunday. Yeah. And I guess the best way to put it, Aaron, is that it was very similar to the Carlos Rodon we saw on opening day in 2013. Obviously, you weren't there for that one. We were there. A lot of us at VA were there. He was good, but he wasn't great. And Canisius, how about the Griffs? A lot of swag for a team from Buffalo in February.
Yeah, it's a good word for it. You know, they played with confidence.
I'm stealing that from a scout, by the way. I didn't come up with that on my own. So.
Well, they played with confidence, and, you know, they were in a regional right down the road here in Chapel Hill last year, and they played well there. They gave North Carolina a run.
They did.
And they were confident, and you know, Ron Pierce did a great job hitting his spots, kind of a low slot righty with some run and sink, and
very sweepy slider.
Sweepy slider and a change piece. And, you know, he mixed them all up and kept them off balance. He just didn't really give NC State a chance. They didn't really threaten.
And no runner passed second base until the ninth inning.
Yeah. So it was a pretty one-sided game. And not that, you know, Canisius didn't. I don't think they squared up Rodon.
Right. I agree.
Maybe the first batter of the game. It wasn't. even that ball wasn't scorched. It was a double into the corner. It was probably the best contact that they had.
Yep.
They scratched across three runs. They took advantage of some, you know, shaky defense a little bit. And Rodon, certainly, I think we could agree, his command wasn't very sharp.
Absolutely.
But
he had like a Logan Jernigan in him there in the fourth or fifth, whatever it was.
Hitting batters.
Hit a couple batters, walked the guy to force in a run. It was an unearned run because there had been an error earlier in the inning. But yeah, that was not a clean inning by any stretch of the imagination.
And Rodon's velocity wasn't where it will be either. I mean,
right.
You know, it's funny because Jeff Hoffman came out of the chute 94-97 on Friday. But Rodon was really mostly kind of 90-92, touch of three, maybe a four or two. And that's it. I mean, it might have been one or two 94s, depending on what gun you look at.
It was very similar to what he did last year, which is in contrast to his freshman season when he came out in these short burst on 3 days rest, and that's when he just burst down the scene with the 97s we kept on hearing in the first week of his college career. It was kind of interesting how, you know, definitely the weather here has not been ideal, but Jeff Hoffman is down the road. But it sounds like he, and we had a, you know, scout talk about his, how good he was, how good Hoffman had been in a scrimmage the week before. I was at Rodon's scrimmage the week before. The velocity is very similar. It's going to be interesting to watch just how, but like as Carlos tweeted after the game, short memory was his only tweet. So, you know, he wasn't in his usual routine, throwing on a Sunday.
A lot of
other factors in there. And as one of the scouts I talked to yesterday was, you know, it's one, you know, one game look, you're not going to bury a guy on. It wasn't like he was bad, but he was not at his best. And it's like Jeff Hoffman was about as good as he could really be. Verlander-ish look on Friday was the way one scout put it to us. So it's going to be fun to follow all year, Aaron. We're just very fortunate, as you wrote about, great year to be in North Carolina from a draft perspective. And then the best look of all this week, it might have just been Trey Turner.
Yeah.
He was really impressive yesterday. So we'll have more about that at baseballamerica.com. Aaron, go back to the rankings. We talked about this on Friday's Google Hangout. We don't want to get too much, again, into the agent part of it. But Oregon State, number two, sweeps this weekend despite all that against Gonzaga, Nebraska, Pacific. How do they withstand, though, this this change for the Beavers minus Ben Wetzler? They're not a one-man team, certainly not a one-man pitching staff. But how do they go about weathering this as the season goes on with this temporary, we hope, absence of Ben Wetzler?
Yeah, and there's been some reports out there that you know, the NCAA wants to suspend him for half the season, and Oregon State's trying to go for just 10%. People I've talked to say they don't know where that came from, so I don't know what that is. But
there'll be a lot more on this later this week, Aaron's.
Yeah. You can expect word. I from what I hear, you can expect word from the NCAA about how long he'll be sidelined this week.
Okay.
So that'll give us some clarity. But you know, it's funny. Them and Oregon are two teams now. That even, let's say Wetzler isn't even at Oregon State.
Right.
Hypothetically.
Say they pull a James Paxton and he doesn't pitch all year.
Right. If you're looking at that staff now with Andrew Moore, first team All-American last year as your Friday guy.
Yeah.
With Jace Fry, who's got real talent as your Saturday guy, left-hander that can really pitch and has a loose arm. And
coming off Tommy John,
Tommy John, but now he pitched last year coming off Tommy John, so he's farther away now.
Right.
His stuff is going to jump up. He's going to be, I think, a really good Saturday guy. And then they moved Scott Schultz into that Sunday role, closer last year.
Six-year senior, correct.
He's been there forever.
Yeah.
And he, you know, seven strong innings. I mean, he's good, John.
I think he stayed with Jacoby Ellsbury on his recruiting trip.
I don't think he's that old.
Okay,
John.
Mitch Cannon, I'm sorry.
He, you know, I've seen him before in relief up to 93 with sink and, you know, a good slider. I mean, he's good. He's got good stuff. So that's three legit guys. They still have plenty of pieces in the bullpen. They're deep.
Like you said, both Oregon teams, Oregon and Oregon State, both having to take these preseason blows.
Right.
The thing is with Wetzler, Oregon State was already planning
to
not have him. He was just single-digit draft. You don't expect that guy to come back. Great bonus if he does, but they certainly do have the depth to withstand it.
So. Right. And in Oregon, you know, it's funny, when the Irvin thing happened, we said, well, we might have to revisit it. Maybe we'll move the Ducks down in the rankings in week one. But, you know, they're perfectly fine on the mound, too, without Cole Irvin. I mean, it'd be better if they had him because he's really good. I like that guy a lot. But, you know, they went to Hawaii for a four-game series, and they've still got plenty of arms to deal with a four-game series, even without that guy, and he might be one of their best. Well, he is one of their best arms.
Is that the strange line of the week, though, as you put in the Top 25 Tracker, Matt Crook with seven wild pitches?
Yeah.
Oh, he walked two guys, but seven wild pitches.
Right, and he only allowed, what, two runs in seven innings? I mean, it was
none earned.
None earned. So, yeah, strange line. But Matt Crook, you know, I had heard that he'd been throwing really well heading into the season. No concerns about his shoulder. So I think that's a pretty encouraging debut, even though there was some wildness there.
And we're talking injuries and Pac-12. And we would be remiss if we didn't go right. Oregon's 11, UCLA right there at 12, Aaron. Jeez. And they just had a brutal first week of the season from an injury standpoint for the Bruins. Again, a deep team, defending national champions. They win their series this weekend. But pretty bad week for the Bruins.
Losing Eric Faliya and Kevin Kramer for the year, first of all. I mean,
Those are the two best hitters.
Two best players, period.
I mean, that's a massive hole in their team.
You're starting shortstop, and a guy that has been, you know, a three-year starter.
Faliya was their best hitter in Omaha last year.
He was, absolutely.
I mean, he was like their money RBI guy,
He hit something like 460 in the postseason or in Omaha or something. I mean, he was the clutch guy. And you're right, he was their money RBI guy. And so, yes, I mean, it's really hard to see them, John, and I'm not going to bury them.
Right.
But it's hard to see them getting back to where they were last year without those two guys. And then Kevin Williams is out at least a month. That's another senior piece that they were really counting
athletic.
On. Athletic.
Guy who can skill it up.
Yeah, and he can hit. You know, so didn't really hit a whole lot last year, but he wasn't healthy either.
Right.
Boy, I texted John Savage about it on Friday night, and his answer, part of baseball. You know, they're not going to dwell on it. What else can you say? He's not going to feel bad for himself. And they went out there and they won games on Saturday and Sunday, so we left them where they were in the rankings. But that's a team that, you know, they got Cal Poly coming in this weekend. Cal Poly looked great, I hear, against Kansas State. I mean, they swept them emphatically. I suspect Cal Poly will win that series, and then you could see a little adjustment in the rankings with UCLA. If they hang in there, and you got to give UCLA this, they have arms.
Yes, they have arms. They're like Oregon and Oregon State.
That's gonna carry them.
They have John Savage.
They have the best closer in the country, and he went four innings in an extra inning game and didn't allow anything because that's what David Berg does.
# submarine closers are awesome.
And he's the best of the breed.
He is. He is. That's the crazy thing. There have been some really, really good submarine closers. I'll invoke the Derek DePriest and Colter Beans of the
Jack
day.
Krawcheck,
Jack Krawcheck was low slot, but how about Darren O'Day, Connor Falkenback, one of my all-time favorite names. But David Berg is the best.
He's
the best of all those guys. He might have to just retire the submarine closer for this guy.
He's even
how about
better.
The guy who was the setup guy at South Carolina in 2010?
Yeah,
John Taylor. John Taylor was automatic.
Really good.
He was
really
unbelievable.
Good.
David Berg is better than all those guys.
Is he better than Caleb Gloffenheim?
Well, let's not go there. Caleb Gloffenheim, all-time. He's like in the Sicknarf Loopstock Hall of Fame for names.
That's true.
Gloffenheim, what a great name. Great pull. I forgot all about that guy.
You love that guy.
I wrote a whole column about Caleb Gloffenheim. But David Berg is... So they do have David Berg. They have James Caprillion. They have Grant Watson. They have experience. They do have...
Cody Petit, who was okay on Sunday, but not as good. But
they don't have Hunter Virant, correct?
Virant,
I'm sorry.
I guess he's out for the year.
Then they do... offensively, there are fewer answers. There's less depth.
Yes.
Most college teams are going to have, what, 80-20? 75-25 in their scholarships in pitching versus hitting. There's just fewer. You just have more scholarship arms than you have scholarship reserves, basically for position players. So it really, I mean, you noted that he hit third this weekend. Ty Moore was a big time dude in high school. Didn't have a big freshman year, but this guy is this is the guy who's going to have to.
Absolutely.
I hate to use the word step up, but
and Chris Keck.
Right.
As a you know, now they're starting third baseman, a guy they've been waiting on, and he hasn't had a whole lot of opportunity. There have been guys in front of him, but he's gotta step up to use that same term. And they still have Pat Gallagher, you know, veteran guy, and Shane Zeal's gotta have a better year. All those guys need to elevate their games. It's not gonna be easy, but they do have enough pitching that I still think they're gonna be a top 25 team.
Right. It's not all on Ty Moore,
right.
But Ty Moore probably has more scholarship money than the average position player there. If not, he was, at the very least, recruited with more fanfare than the average position player at UCLA. So of whom more is given, more is expected, and that's the situation that the Bruins find themselves in. It's a Baseball America podcast with John and Aaron. Aaron, the next place I thought I would go was Indiana. We could go somewhere else. But, you know, actually, you mentioned Cal Poly. Let's stay on the West real quick because you previewed Cal Poly and Kansas State.
Yeah.
I think you and I, you're going to Manhattan later this season.
Yes.
To get a firsthand look at the Wildcats. I love the just the blue-collar grind program that K-State has become under Brad Hill, the heights that he has taken this formerly nondescript college baseball program. And preseason ranking in the top 25 after going to a super regional last year. And they go to Cal Poly, and not only do they get swept, but this is a lineup that I think we thought, what was their fit matrix grade was pretty high.
Their offense grade was high, and it's because they were an elite offense last year. They were right. Top 10 team in nation in hitting.
That's the word. They were elite with the bats last year. And Cal Poly just snuffed them out this weekend. That was probably the most impressive weekend any team had, was Cal Poly visiting a borderline top 25 team versus a top 25 preseason ranked team. And you expect the West Coast team to be ahead of the Midwest team early, but they weren't ahead by a little bit. They lapped them.
Yeah, and you know, I expected Matt Imhoff to be really good. I didn't necessarily expect 14 strikeouts against a really good team that doesn't strike out that much.
That's crazy.
But the next two guys, to me, Slater Lee and Casey Bloomquist, to come out there and shove the way they did, that's the only reason Cal Poly wasn't in the preseason top 25 was I didn't trust the rotation after Imhoff. I mean,
right.
They lost Joey Wagman. You know, there were these two unknowns that were sliding their rotation, and Larry Lee said it last week. He's like, we don't know what we're going to get out of these guys.
Right. I mean, this sounded in the lead up to the weekend. It sounded like after Imhoff, a Johnny Holstaff weekend for both teams. You know, both coaches were talking about, like, hey, let's hope we get five.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously worked out much better than that for the Mustangs.
Yeah, so if Poly, you know, if they're number two and three guys can pitch like that all year long, I think they're really complete because I like the three main guys they have in the bullpen. I love their lineup, the capability of their lineup. I mean, it's one of those teams, you know, even last year, I liked their talent so much that I always thought of them as a really offensive club. And Larry Lee made the point that they actually underachieved on offense last year for most of the season. Mm-hmm. You look up and their stats weren't really that loud. But this weekend, I think they performed offensively more like they're capable of. And you saw, you know, a guy like Jimmy Allen, who I've always really liked as a senior, you know, he had a nice weekend and drove in some runs. And he's got to be in the middle of a lot of rallies for them. Nick Torres, I think, is a great player. One of the best players who didn't make our preseason All-America team for me. Mm. You know,
was he the Roth star?
I think he was one of the Roth stars.
I thought he was listed.
You know, and he had a good weekend. And you know, Mundell drove in some runs. I mean, they've got some real physicality in the middle. I've always liked Jordan Ellis in center field, just an athlete that can do a lot of different things, and you know, has some strength also. I mean, they're just. I think they're good. I think they're really good. And you know, you talked about Kentucky.
Yeah,
being right outside the rankings in the preseason, Cal Poly. I mean, the teams for me, the next five after our top 25,
those two,
Cal Poly, Wazoo, Kentucky, Arizona State, Florida Atlantic, and yeah, maybe Wazoo. I mean, I think I'm forgetting somebody else that was strongly in the mix. But those are the teams that I feel like we talked the most about.
I remember talking about Wazoo a lot, and because they were on that borderline for me, and it was just they came up. There were like three West Coast teams that were right on that cusp. Yeah. Arizona State, which lost its first game to Baylor, but rallied to win the weekend series. Wazoo had to go on the road to Fullerton. Not an easy way to open a season. They were competitive, win a game, obviously. Yeah.
And you know, they lost
the final by a run.
And they were in the lead in that game on Sunday for a while, too. So that was a game they could have won. But, you know, their pitching depth, I think, is not where, you know, it's not where Fullerton's pitching depth is.
Right.
That's the bottom line. So
right.
it's hard to win a Sunday game against a staff as deep as Fullerton's.
Aaron, do you imagine that a guy like Thomas Eshelman, who was so good last year as a freshman, I mean, he was so good. He reminds me so much of Wes Romer, the former Fullerton All-American Friday guy, command and control guy. How much do you think being left off the preseason All-America team motivates a guy like Thomas Eshelman, or does he need that kind of motivation? I have to imagine Rick Vanderhook printed that thing out and put it in his locker.
Yeah, maybe. That's,
I mean, that's the kind of thing Hooky would
that's
do.
That's the kind
isn't
of thing
it?
Hooky would do. You're right. That's a good call. I mean, I'm sure he's on a lot of other preseason All-America teams,
right?
To be fair. But, you know, we all know how great Thomas Eshelman is. I mean, and it's funny. He just did the same thing this weekend that he always does. He goes out there, was it 8 strikeouts, no walks, of course.
Unbelievable.
I mean, it's just his career strikeout walk ratio is one of the most ridiculous things ever.
That guy gets to Omaha, he's liable to pitch a no-hitter.
Yeah.
I mean, in that ballpark?
Yeah.
he's liable to pitch a no-hitter in that ballpark. Because, I mean, he carves up the zone, and he doesn't seem like people ever square him up.
That's it. That's it. And it's just four pitches, any pitch in any count, and any location, and it's just he's tough.
Yeah, he just his consistency. Every coach talks about consistency with young players, and we're talking about college baseball players, so they're all young players. His consistency is just so off the charts. He's never going to have seven wild pitches in a game. No offense to Matt Crook. This guy's never going to have seven wild pitches in a career. I could be back there catching them. They wouldn't be wild pitches.
Yeah, I mean, he's in that Aaron Nola mold, and you can't compare a lot of guys to Aaron Nola.
Right.
But those two guys are in a league of their own as far as command in college baseball for me.
Well, you said Aaron Nola. That gives me a great opportunity to go to the SEC, talk a little bit about the Southeastern Conference. First of all, it's cool to see some college baseball on MLB Network this weekend. Urban Invitational in New Orleans. But I guess they relocated some of that I couldn't even recognize the ballpark on TV. Didn't they play some of that in
Metairie?
Yeah, so that's why I saw I didn't recognize the ballpark because they were actual, ads on the walls. But, UNO's program kind of coming back, the return of Ron Maestri to Division I baseball is kind of interesting. Blake Dean being an assistant coach for New Orleans and his younger brothers playing at LSU. It's kind of fun to watch a little bit of that on TV. But anything stand out to you from the SEC this weekend? I mean, there wasn't really the biggest statement series, if it was a statement, was Vanderbilt going to Long Beach State, sweeping three games. Long Beach State's not quite back to what they once were, but still a good program and still a good team. And Vanderbilt just kind of brushed them aside, pitching-wise. Pretty thick marine layer. Not sure if you saw that picture of Brian Miller.
Yeah, I did.
Was that marine layer or was that just fog?
No, I think that's marine layer. I think that's appropriate use of marine layer.
All right, that was a pretty cool picture. If you don't, if you haven't seen the picture, go on the Twitter machine and find Vanderbilt baseball. There was a great picture they tweeted out of Brad Miller, another sidearm submarine
Brian
type.
Miller.
Brian Miller, thank you. Brad Miller is a Clemson shortstop throwing, finishing a pitch, and the ball is coming right out of the marine layer. Tough to pick up, and impossible to elevate.
Sidebar here, Johnny.
Yes.
I loved. And if Tyler Kincaid, if you're listening at San Diego, was taunting me about leaving that perfect weather on the West Coast, and then, of course, he...
Tyler Kincaid, who I schooled in Words with Friends, by the way.
Wow, all right.
Tyler, I'm going to talk a little Words with Friends smack on you here.
But anyway, he was taunting me, and then he came up back with a mea culpa tweet and said, oh, we got a fog delay here in San Diego. I mean, that game wound up being suspended, so...
That's funny.
How about that?
I love that. A little meal.
I got five games out here in North Carolina this weekend. If you're listening,
in the snow, no less. But Vanderbilt, pretty impressive.
Yes.
South Carolina was impressive. It was Bucknell. No Matthew Wilson pitching beautifully for Bucknell in this one.
They were overmatched, but South Carolina, very strong performance. And how about Will Crow? Another guy that...
highly touted freshman.
Yeah, and another guy that left with a no-hitter intact. So there are like four of those this weekend, I think, at least.
We're going to look back on the Tennessee high school baseball class of 2013. It's going to be fascinating to watch how those guys go. Kyle Serrano comes out of there. Dakota Hudson, who went to...
Serrano won his debut, by the way, this weekend.
Right.
And Hudson, I think, pitched okay.
Hudson pitched very well. I believe... I saw tweets from the Mississippi State writers that he was touched 98. Out of the bullpen for Mississippi State.
Yeah, I heard 95, 96. I believe 98.
Yeah, and I mean, the velocity, he's a big, raw-boned, tall kid. And then you got Will Crow. Those three kids
are
going to make their mark in the Southeastern Conference. Scouts knew it was a very exciting prep class in Tennessee last year. It's going to be fascinating to watch how those guys progress.
And I heard Crow stuff was filthy, too, this week. I mean,
he's a bad mother.
Oh.
Yeah, he's really...
Yeah, that guy's your Sunday guy behind those two lefties who can really pitch. I mean, they just... what a great different look to give hitters, and it's just three really good pitchers. And I like their offense, the way it performed this weekend. I mean,
yeah,
I think...
Some home runs.
I think South Carolina, I feel good about that as the team to beat in the SEC right now.
I agree. Like you said, LSU, Mississippi State.
Vanderbilt, I didn't really get to comment on that, but I mean.
I was going there next. That's
Yeah. Sorry.
That's okay. Keep going.
Vanderbilt.
You're the expert.
Vanderbilt, they can pitch, Sean.
They have such ridiculous depth.
They have so many arms. It's crazy.
Embarrassing. I mean, it's embarrassing to say. Again, I'm not trying to bang on the guy. TJ Pecoraro, who's like an upper 80s command and control guy. Was he a fourth year junior?
Yeah.
He's had Tommy John. He came back. He was their Friday guy a couple of years ago.
Yep.
He just completely lost in this shuffle. I mean, it must be...
No relief.
Yeah. I mean, it must be... And that if there are injuries or someone falters, they probably trust this guy to go start a game for them if they need it. But, I mean, this is what should have followed from back-to-back number one recruiting classes. Yeah. Just, you know, have this embarrassment of riches on the mound. And
Tyler Ferguson is a guy that nobody really talked a whole lot about. I mean, we knew about him. I mean, I knew what he was capable of doing. But he was out there, and I think I saw there's reports that he was like 93, 95.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's heavy, and he's got a really good curveball, and it's just, that's your Sunday guy again.
Their Sunday guy, and they have, you know, the scouting directors I talked to, I told the two guys just about the weekend in general on Sunday, because there were several directors, at least five or six directors in Raleigh on Sunday. And two of the guys that I talked to both said that the reports from the weekend, one of the most encouraging reports was how good Tyler Beattie looked. Tyler Beattie threw strikes. And the last look that a lot of these scouting directors have had, besides fall ball, but against other teams where it wasn't intra-squad, was in a USA national team uniform last summer for Tyler Beattie, and he was a mess. That's the only time I've ever seen him in person, and he was a mess. His delivery was all over the place. He could not throw strikes. And so it was very encouraging. I think his strong five innings, what do you walked one, that was one of the most encouraging developments from a scouting development, from a draft standpoint, of the whole weekend was how good Tyler Beattie looked. So obviously you're also very encouraged if you're Vanderbilt. But how much better could he be for Vanderbilt? What was he, 14-1 last year?
Right.
Gave up fewer hits than walks. I mean, the guy was almost literally unhittable last year. So embarrassment of riches there. Aaron, we actually have a couple of Twitter questions, at least I do. One from Jason Knipp. In our rankings and analysis, how much weight do we put into Sunday games versus Friday and Saturday? Example, Kentucky's weekend. I would say that the weekend, all those games count more than midweek games. I mean, I think we just kind of take every game. I guess it's a matter of you take the weekend in total. Don't you try to take the weekend kind of in total, Aaron? What is the big picture of what a team did on a weekend?
Yeah, that's true. And you know, maybe occasionally, you know, like in Kentucky's case, I mean, they played two great games and lost the Sunday game. I mean, I still think you're right. I think you look at the weekend as a whole. I don't think we necessarily place more weight on the Friday game than the Sunday game. Because if you got two great starters, you don't have a third starter, you're still flawed.
Right.
You know, I mean, the Sunday games are important. And yes, we've made no secret of the fact that we tend to weight weekend games more than midweek games. And midweek games count too. But if you're in the postseason, you know, it's designed really to win three games in regionals and then three games in super regionals. And if you keep doing that pattern, I mean, you can win the national championship.
Right.
So, I mean, the four starter just isn't as important. Unless you fall into a loser's bracket, I suppose. But, I mean, it's nice to have a four starter. It's nice to win midweek games. But the weekend games are what matters.
Yep. You know, we actually have quite a few questions, which is really cool. So, for those of you listening, thanks a lot. I'm not going to be able to answer all of them, but a lot of good questions on here, including Brian, at Choice Selection, Brian C., I can't pronounce his last name. How do these cold weather teams continue to win? Coaching and state talent? Let's just take Canisius, for example, Aaron, as one example. But there, I mean, first of all, I think that they just don't think of themselves that way.
Right.
I just remember my template for this, recently anyway, is from the bearded wonder himself, Kurt Casale, on that Vanderbilt 2011 team. But first of all, he's talking about that toughness mentality of Northern kids who are used to obstacles in their path for playing baseball. But I think most of these teams just, they carry that chip on their shoulder. And again, Canisius played with it this weekend.
Yeah, no, that's it. And you know, they don't think of themselves as disadvantaged.
Right.
And they just, you know, they got a lot of experience in that team. And, you know, I think a lot of the Northern teams that are successful early in the year in particular are the ones that have a lot of veterans. And that's not, you know.
Like Clemson's series against Eastern Michigan. Was it Eastern Michigan or Central Michigan Eastern Michigan that you had pretty high expectations for this team.
Well, Central Michigan is the one that I like more.
Okay.
But Eastern Michigan is offensive. And, you know, they expected to score a lot of runs this weekend. And they battled pretty hard and did swing the bats pretty well down to Clemson. They won one of those games down there. But
those teams, that still, they don't go down there to cash a check. You know, Binghamton came and played Duke in a tight series, won a game from Duke, correct?
Yeah, I think so.
Duke's a borderline regional team. Binghamton's not here to cast a check. They've been to regionals, too. I mean, these teams just, you know, and I think all these teams, Aaron, you can speak to this more than I could. How many, for these coaches or for those players, how great of an example and a carrot was Stony Brook? And Kent State, huge for those programs, aren't they?
Oh, man. I mean, it changed everything. It really did. And, you know, I love this story that a scout told me after the Stony Brook run. I think it was in the fall. He went to a game. And there's kids out there with, you know, Jankowski taped on their backs.
That's
you know,
so
out
there. Awesome. I remember that story.
I mean, it's just that kind of stuff. It really captivated a lot of people up there. But it also gave all those – it did give all those schools hope. You know, I mean, it can be done. As a four seed, as a northern four seed.
To go to freaking Alex Box? Are you kidding me? It's still, like, impossible to believe in retrospect.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is just, you say it out loud, Stony Brook went to Alex Box.
After they went to Miami the week before.
That's right. I mean, they beat two programs that have 10 national championships between them. It's so insane. It is so insane. I would not believe it if I hadn't seen it in person. That's just awesome. Couple other Twitter questions we have here, and again, I'm at John Manuel BA. He's at Aaron Fitt. For those of us not familiar with 2014 Long Beach, can you put Vandy's weekend into perspective? How good we expect? Where did Long Beach fall in our preseason? If we'd done preseason rankings in the Big West, where did they fall?
To me, they'd probably be in that somewhere in that kind of 4 to 5 or 6 range. You know, I think the top three teams. For me, pretty clearly, Fullerton, Poly, and then probably Santa Barbara.
Right.
And then I think you're talking about Long Beach in the mix there with maybe Irvine and the Riverside. I mean, to me, those three teams are the next tier. And those, you know, I could see any of those six teams competing for a regional. I feel best about those top three. But I think Long Beach should be, you know, again, they've got a lot of older guys now, in the lineup especially. And on the mound, they're healthier. You know, they've had some injury issues in the past. I mean, there's not a lot of elite top-end talent there like Long Beach had back in the Salad days.
Right. It's too much to expect anyone to come up with Tulowitzki and Longoria at the same time, which is really just crazy. Or, you know, and Jared Weaver in that same mix. And the line of big leaguers out of Long Beach State there was pretty epic for a while.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, they started Nick Szabo on Friday, and that's a lefty that I've always kind of been intrigued by. I mean, again, it's not a huge velocity, but it's got angle and pitchability and actually pretty decent stuff. And he, you know, he pitched okay on Friday. I mean, they've got some depth on the mound, and you know, again, veterans like Eno Patron and Michael Hill, Richard Prigitano, Eric Cutting and Johnny Bukakis out there, and they've got a lot of older players. So
I mean, those guys are all. I know all those guys. They've been there a while.
So. And then Garrett Hampson, the dynamic freshman shortstop, who's an exciting player for them. I think Long Beach should be decent. I think that's a nice test to open the season for Vanderbilt. I mean, again, it's not an elite opponent, but it's a nice weekend.
I'm also going to go to at Dylan Carlos. He asks, where can you download, and what do you think of Tulane's Friday starter, J.P. France? First off, where do you download Baseball America? Just search Baseball America on iTunes in the podcast department. You can also find the Baseball America podcast on our website. It's harder than it used to be for whatever reason. You go to the redesignbaseballamerica.com.
We'll have it in the rotator today.
It will be in the rotator. We've learned that. But if you scroll down, basically a screen where there's the viewpoint, or there's a line of mugshots, J.J. Cooper, Tracy Rigglesby, myself. There's a logo right next to it that says podcast. That's where you find the Baseball America podcast. And J.P. France, Aaron, first Friday starter or opening day starter apparently for Rick Jones, first time he ever started a freshman on opening day. J.P. France was a BA 500 member, and he had a great debut.
Yeah, he did, and you know, it's a power arm. I mean, it's a guy that I think is going to be a real impact guy for them. I mean, a low 90s arm with a good slider. I mean, he's...
And a strong build, like some strength in his body was the thing that scouts know. It was the debate for him out of high school was how much projection is there on this guy. Because he had his man strength to an extent already.
Kind of like a Keegan Thompson type at Auburn.
Yeah,
another guy who had a really nice debut, by the way.
Preseason freshman of the year for me, nationally. Right. I like Keegan Thompson. That's did you pick him?
I had Chris Oakey.
I went Keegan Thompson.
I went Keegan for SEC freshman of the year.
Maybe that's what I... maybe, I don't know. I remember I was all over... I'm bullish on Keegan Thompson for the Auburn Tigers.
Indeed.
So,
But France, yeah, for me, he's in that mold. He's a physically mature... pretty advanced freshman and a competitor and a guy that you know he's going to be probably a legit Friday starter for 3 years there.
Well, Jeff in D.C., we've asked and answered on that question. Will you guys stand behind UVA or jump ship after the first weekend? I guess Cavaliers, they're not Commodores. So that would be the jumping ship.
Jeff in D.C. is a frequent
Cavalier fan.
He's a Twitter combatant. He's an anti ACC.
Okay. Do you still believe they have the best team? Yes. And then Jason Nip in our rankings, we answered that question. And at Matt Lozar, I just want to make sure everyone who tweeted at us, we mentioned this, thoughts on the Canisius NC State game. I think we talked a lot about that. But Steve G. Gherkin did ask, thoughts on Wayne Graham about to get his 1,000th win. What is his legacy? I don't think he was in the position of having to defend a legacy a la Peyton Manning. But Wayne Graham's legacy, Aaron, first and foremost, I mean, he just defines college baseball in Texas to be for the last 30 years. Both first at San Jack, national championship coach, Coach Roger Clemens, Coach Dandy Pettit, and then making Rice relevant. I mean, made Rice from nothing unto being probably the most consistent program over the last, during his tenure. They basically win the conference championship every year that he's been there. It's unbelievable to be that consistent. And he made Rice relevant in baseball, won a national championship, a team that will always be special to me. The last time I covered Omaha start to finish was Rice 03. And, it's one of the – I think he gets bashed a lot in the interwebs these days because of the track record of their pitchers in pro ball. And there's some substance to that, but I don't think it's all on Wayne Graham. And, to me, he's just one of my all-time favorite people in college baseball, one of college baseball's all-time great coaches.
Yes. I mean, he summed it up pretty perfectly. I mean, he's one of those guys that anytime you get a chance to see him.
I'm kicking myself still from not getting out to their Super Regional last year. The draft and the Super Regionals, being at the same time, I didn't get out to Raleigh last year for that Super Regional. I'm just kicking myself that I missed Wayne there.
Every time you see him, it's a treat. Because, you know, before the game, you're walking on the field, he's sitting on the top, back of the dugout, and he sees it, goes, oh, hey, and he invites you to come down and take a seat and, just wants to talk baseball and tell stories. And it's just such a great baseball man. And
his passion for his players and for the game remains undiminished, I mean, it's just hard to – you just don't make them like that anymore, So I love talking to him back in the day about throwing BP to the Astros back in the day, doing those kind of things. But to me, he just – he was also all about Houston. He had great passion for that area and for he wanting to see the city of Houston be a baseball city.
Yeah.
And, the Astros' success was important to him.
Right.
Rice's success, University of Houston's success, high school teams in that area, Carl Crawford being good in the big league, all those things, any Houston player you could think of, that was important to him. So I always respected Wayne as a big picture guy.
Yeah.
And just think about the fact that if you play for Wayne Graham – at Rice, you played for a guy who played for Casey freaking Stengel in the big leagues, who was Babe Ruth's teammate. You talk about the degrees of separation here and what the game, what baseball has. Wayne Graham is this link to this other time in baseball that is very unique and very special, and love Wayne.
And you talk about how he's a great big picture guy. I think a great example of that is how he was really leading the crusade here to change the ball.
Yeah.
Because even though he's a pitching guy and he's, his style is pitching and defense, and he was not somebody who could ever hit the long ball in his playing days.
Right.
Home run never did anything for Wayne Graham. But he thinks it's important for the game that we not lose the home run and the excitement that it brings, and we don't want to go back to the dead ball era.
I think it's awesome you brought this up.
And so, that was selfless for me. I mean, I don't think that was one of those things that he was doing because he thought it would give him any kind of competitive advantage. I think he is genuinely concerned about the direction the game was heading, and he spoke out about it.
Talk about legacy. I mean, that's how he wants to be remembered.
Yeah.
That he did. He gave back to college baseball. It gave him so much. So I don't think we can top that, Aaron. A little Wayne Graham stuff. So great questions. Hit us up every week. You can email at podcast@baseballamerica.com, but frankly, Twitter is the better way to do it. He's at Aaron Fitt. I'm at John Manuel BA. This is the Baseball America College Podcast brought to you by Louisville Slugger. We'll be back next Monday and every Monday during the season to talk college baseball with you here at baseballamerica.com. For Aaron, I'm John. We'll see you next week. So long, everybody.